All right, got to snap out of the doldrums today. Back indoors after a glorious 2 weeks at the Florida Blue practice fields for Jaguars today. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Glad you're along with us on this Thursday morning. Tony, we do have a lot to get into today. We've got six games in the National Football League preseason, full week one tonight. You know, I guess it's week two for the Steelers and the Vikings, but you get the point. Everybody else opening up their preseason, whether it's tonight all the way through Sunday with Indy and Philly, I think, on Sunday. So plenty of storylines to keep our eyes on. We'll hear from Gus Bradley. Not that he, you know, who knows, maybe he'll pop in on the way back. But more likely, we'll hear what he had to say after practice yesterday, I think. And we wrap up today, Tony, taking a look at the Jaguars' regular season opponents. We've run through everyone in the order of appearance on the Jaguars' schedule, and the New Orleans Saints, the final one. I think they're the 15th game in week 16 of the NFL season, if I'm not mistaken, which I might be, but I think they are week 16. I know you're looking up to the schedule that Fortunato had drawn up on the board.
I can't read it all the way over there.
He erased it, didn't he?
No, well, the schedule's
there's
posted.
One tucked in the corner.
And it looks like the next to last week is two words.
Oh, there you go. We'll go with that. That team. Whatever the case may be, they play the New Orleans Saints, and we're going to talk to Juan Kincaid from WWL Television in the Big Easy later on in the program this morning. And we'll take your calls, your thoughts on the Jags. If you're out there in training camp, were you excited? Were you disappointed? Were you ho-hum? Are you taking a wait-and-see approach? What is your perspective on it? I know one of the most frequent things I heard was, can't really tell you because they were practicing so far away from us, but whatever the case may be, hopefully you got to take in a little bit of training camp and get you primed for the preseason tomorrow. Jags and Steelers, obviously tomorrow we'll do our best to preview some of the matchups, some of the position battles on this football team.
Sure.
I got a chance to talk to Stefan Wisniewski yesterday, Tony, and another one of these smart guys, you know, just a professional football player, you know, and with emphasis on the word professional, and a Penn State grad, not a big surprise. So they've done well with some of those guys like Paul Posluszny in the past, hope to do well with others. But, you know, we'll hear that conversation coming up tomorrow on the pregame show. Going to hear a lot of things on the pregame. I'm told there is an exclusive, in-depth look inside the mind of Vito Staline.
Yeah, J.P. Chadwick excitedly came to the studio to announce
Vito covered the Steelers for a long time, so J.P. picked his brain on that, and was what was initially a 20-minute interview conversation was pared down to about 8 minutes.
Yeah, we don't have 20 minutes for much.
No, we don't. No, we don't. Although we have a little bit more room in the preseason, how that goes. But you'll hear that that abridged version on the pregame before they finally post that whole thing on Jaguars.com. And I just have to say, I don't know if I've ever looked forward to a pregame show interview more than that one. Although the highlight got me ready to hear Freddie T tomorrow, too.
No doubt.
I'll hear him in the pregame with JP, and then we'll be in studio with Fred for the postgame tomorrow. Looking forward to that, and we crank this thing back up. Can you believe it? It's here, really. Right?
I really can't.
I mean, it's game week now, so we're a day away. Whether they count or not, the mechanics of getting ready for the week and the broadcast week pretty much remain the same from this point forward.
No, they do, but 20 of them. We get 20 of them. So enjoy them while they're here, Jacksonville.
We get 23 of them, Tony. Well, that's what happens.
I'll take as many as we can get.
We're not playing that wild card weekend either.
As many as we can get.
Got to buy, okay?
Yep.
Something in the low 20s would be preferable, pushing towards the mid-20s. Today, we ask you to get a little less Jaguar-centric in your thinking. And other than the Jags, what is your favorite NFL storyline or the one that intrigues you the most this preseason? Look, it could be Deflategate, I suppose, still for somebody. And we do want to know what the resolution of that is. And I'll tell you this, I do want to see Garoppolo tonight get an extended look up there in New England because, you know, they're going through quarterbacks right now, and Brady's not going to play tonight, so maybe you get a glimpse of what is going to be on the field for the New England Patriots in the early part of the season, but there are plenty of storylines out there. So that's the question of the day, which you can tweet your answers to us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at 1010XL Tyler, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. Which NFL storyline is most intriguing to you other than Jaguar-related storylines? Also, Tony, tweeting out, I've not checked my email, and I don't plan to for the next hour and a half at least. But
okay.
I've got my season tickets. I asked the wife She's not going to the game. Not a great surprise. So I've got the tickets, and you know, I've had people ask me, well, why do you get the tickets? I just want to support the team. So I got the tickets. I don't use them because obviously we're here. We've got credentials. If the wife and kid are not going, then I don't want to let them go to waste. So I just tweeted out a picture of the tickets. And if you want my tickets for tomorrow night's game, email me, MikeD@1010XL.com. But include your phone number and tell me why I should give you the tickets. Because everyone's just going to say, oh, give me the tickets. I want the tickets. I'll use the tickets. I assume everyone wants them who emails me on that regard.
Email people. Just email. Yeah, don't tweet them.
Don't tweet me. Don't tweet me. Don't text me. Don't do anything else. But email me at MikeD@1010XL.com if you want a pair of tickets to tomorrow night's game. Tell me why. And if you don't include your phone number, you got 0% chance of getting the tickets. Because if I get a few over the course of the next couple of hours, Tyler will reach out and contact whomever we decide is the winner of those, and you'll have to pick them up sometime after 1 o'clock, either today or anytime tomorrow. I'll drop them off after the show over at World Headquarters over at 9090 Hogan Road. Again, we've got Gus Bradley coming up. We'll hear from the New Orleans Saints' perspective. Also, the sporting news, very kind to the folks here in Jacksonville at Everbank Field, ranking the Jags Stadium one of the best in the National Football League. We'll take a look a little bit deeper into the rankings there as we go along today. And, boy, Tony, it would have been, to me, the biggest sports story of the year by far. Had Jordan Spieth got into that playoff and won the British Open,
yeah,
it would be dominating the sports landscape, the PGA Championship, as it is the final major of the year ongoing. And you got a four-way tie for the lead. Of course, I used Hideki Matsuyama in my fantasy league last week, Tony. He's currently tied for the lead at 3-under par at the PGA Championship at Whistling Straits. We'll keep an eye out for notables on the leaderboard throughout the course of the show. 641-1010 is the number if you'd like to get on board today. That also, of course, works as the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Send us your thoughts, anything Jaguar-related. We'd love to hear what's on your mind. If you just want to sound off, pick up the phone and rip us off the phone call and do it that way as well. With that, Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. Just getting rolling here on this Thursday. Again, question of the day, which NFL storyline are you most closely following? What one has you most intrigued other than Jaguar-related stuff? Tweet us or post on the Jaguars Today Facebook page with your replies on that. We'll come back. We'll hear from Gus Bradley following yesterday's practice as I try to shake off the doldrums. I need more Gus coming by the studio maybe to get me headed in the right direction. As we continue on, we're live at Everbank. Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
That makes it even more exciting. You know, I'm so anxious to get out there and show the fans what I have proved to my teammates and to the coaching staff and everybody in the Jaguar organization that they made the right choice, man. I just can't wait to play some football.
That's our man Ric Flair right there. Sergio Brown. He's excited. He's an excitable guy, Tony.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
Just a bit.
You can count on hearing Sergio's voice cutting through the din of practice as he talks some trash to whomever is out there. See the tennis trash talk?
No.
Have you seen the little viral video that's going around?
No.
I heard the guys talking about this morning, so I looked it up. Guy goes, guy comes to the net, and apparently the guy he's playing against had gotten divorced and hooked up with this 19-year-old female tennis player. Well, the 19-year-old female tennis player is good friends and a doubles partner, mixed doubles partner with this other tour pro, who's like 70th in the world or something like that. And so one guy says to the other guy across the net, apparently the one guy had been talking trash, and the other guy responds with, so-and-so is banging your girlfriend. or maybe he used past tense,
right,
not in the present tense, banged. And he said, you know, something like, sorry to break it to you. He just headed back to the baseline.
I don't think he was sorry to break
it. No, he wasn't sorry in the least, is the case. She's quite an attractive young lady. But, you know, there you have it. I don't think I haven't heard anything approaching that out of Sergio Brown. It's more good natured.
No,
much more good natured out of Sergio Brown. Tony, what would get you punched in the locker room more? That comment or the finger touching you on the cheek?
Ooh.
The little pokey finger in the face. Don't put the finger in the face.
Yeah, now, you touch somebody else. It's
right. Well, I'm not saying touching someone with the fingertip in the face is legal justification for getting punched in the jaw, but it may be, it certainly makes it a lot more emotionally understandable.
It's provocation.
Get that thing out of my face. Right. I'm going to smack your hand down at the very least. And
even children don't like it.
No.
You know, like if it's something that annoys a child.
So bad. I still do the, I'm not touching you, to my wife all the time. She just is going to murder me in my sleep one of these days. But I do. I'm not touching you. I'm not touching you. What? What? I'm still a centimeter away from your nose with my fingers. Stop it. I'm such a pest. I am. What can I tell you? All right. Before we get to some sound from the Jags from yesterday, got to tell you, boy, Spinner Howland, our friend with the Jacksonville Axemen.
Yeah.
The guy is just working crazy overtime to bring big events here to Jacksonville from the world of rugby. And the Rugby World Cup is going to take place in Australia and New Zealand in 2017.
Yes.
Rugby League World Cup qualifiers, Spinner tells us, have officially been awarded to Jacksonville and DeLand, Florida. And the announcement will come later this afternoon. But what's going to happen is Team USA, Team Canada, and Team Jamaica, between the two cities, are going to play a three-team round robin for the right to go to the World Cup, whoever wins the round robin. And this is coming up in December, December 1st through the 12th. The two United States games will be right here in Jacksonville at Hodges Field.
Yep, over there at UNF.
And
yes.
Canada will take on Jamaica down in DeLand at Speck Martin Stadium. Tony, back at, I'd like to say, scene of my glory days, but I was not a high school football player, but I did have Babe Ruth League practice in Speck Martin Stadium back in the day. I hit many a ball in the bleachers.
So you know the field.
I know it well.
You can
okay?
give
I know
them
the
some
dimensions.
Tips.
I don't know if that matters whatsoever, but
tips
I had to
for the rugby.
I had to make a personal connection to this story somehow. But that's awesome. Team USA vying for the Rugby League World Cup, taking on the national team from Canada and the national team from Jamaica in Hodges Stadium over at UNF, and that's going to take place the first week or two of December.
Yeah, basically the regional qualifiers for this region of the world are going to be here in Northeast Florida, especially Team USA over there at UNF, and pretty cool coming up in a couple weekends. This Saturday is the Southern Conference Championship game down there at UNF. Unfortunately, the Axemen not in it. But 2 weeks from Saturday, the 29th, they have the Rugby League Championship will be in Jacksonville. Before that game, they're actually basically having, it's not officially, but it is an unofficial tryout for the USA Rugby National Team over there. It'll be before the National Championship game on Saturday, August 29th. So if you want to go check out the players that'll be playing here in December, they're still trying to put that team together. They have an unofficial tryout, essentially, before the National Championship game here in a couple weeks.
That's just awesome. I mean, this is as big as it gets in this country for rugby. And Spinner Howland and the Axemen continuing to bring great events to our doorstep. Firehouse signed on as the title sponsor, so congrats and thanks to them as well. And there you have it. All right, let's get to some more sound from yesterday. Sergio Brown, you heard him talking about being excited and looking forward to showing the fans what he can do. You know, I think people have just made this assumption there's going to be this giant gaping hole at free safety, and maybe it will be eventually, but
we'll find out.
Let's see him on the field. Let's see what he does in game type situations. Sergio also just talked about his habit of running his mouth when he's out there on the field.
Yeah, I mean, I love talking, I love chatting, you know, it keeps me on my toes, and you know, the more you communicate with the defense and your players around you, you know, the more you're on the same page, so I feel like it brings everybody up a little bit.
That's fine. You know what, make plays, run your mouth, say whatever you want, right? Don't make plays, get beat over the top,
sure,
be out of position. Don't talk so much.
Yeah, don't be afraid to get physical. You're going to talk all that smack. He told somebody the first weekend of training camp, not exactly in those words. I radioed it up for you out there, Jacksonville, what he had to say. Gus Bradley talking after practice yesterday. Your head coach, Jacksonville, talked about just what he saw in practice in his opening comments.
If you look over there, you see Brandon Linder working with Reed, a free agent lineman. And look at him. He's out here staying after, helping him get better. Over there in the corner is Parnell, and Chris Smith is talking to him about pass rush moves. Julius Thomas, Jonathan Cipri out in the middle field getting open field tackling. It's unbelievable. We're talking about help everybody get better. And that's what this day was all about, you know, reminding them those things like that and how to improve each and every day. What I love about it is it's starting to feel more real. You know, it's not because people said to do it. They're doing it on their own. You know, we've been stressing that throughout. Stressed it even more in OTAs, and it's carried over. So I want to make sure I point that out. Good day today. Took the pads off of them. A little bit of situations. You know, one period of Pittsburgh. One period, it's all we worked on. The rest was, again, back to fine-tuning some install things. You saw us work a goal line short yardage, get another install of that. So overall, pretty good.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing about this first preseason game. You may actually see some what look to be blown plays, and they may not be as bad as you think they are because
right.
of what the team is trying to accomplish. Sometimes, even if the defense isn't the right one to do it against, you're determined that you want to get a look at this formation, this personnel group, whatever the case may be, and you put it out there more to see if you can execute it, and you don't worry so much about what the team opposite you is doing.
Yeah, and it's why, you know, we talk about it in training camp and every year for preseason, and we'll overreact to anything that we see. I mean, we reacted to the scrimmage. It's you don't know what they're working on at any given time unless they tell you, right? And so you react to what you see because it's what we have seen, and it's the most real thing we've seen is the scrimmage, you know, and whatever we've seen out in practice. And once we get through a preseason game, we're obviously going to react to whatever we see, but take it with that understanding that we don't know behind the scenes what they were trying to accomplish on any given thing. We don't know. And so you want to evaluate players as much as you possibly can, but know your evaluation could be completely different than the conversation they're having in this building.
Yeah, one of the things they'd like to do, Tony, and would like to accomplish is certainly get some of these key players that are nicked up, healthy, and back on the field. Marquise Lee, obviously, Sendarek Marks, rehabbing the ACL. Roy Miller, Jaron Odricks missed a couple of practices this week. Gus talked specifically about being cautious with Roy Miller.
I think you remember last year we kind of monitored him and made sure his knee never felt better, but we had to be smart with how we dealt with him. And I think that's what we're doing now, especially this early, you know, trying to come up with a routine of how he feels best and, you know, where it comes back. But he's making good progress, both him and Jared, for probably being more precautionary.
Good. Be precautionary all you like.
All you need to be.
Have them ready against Carolina.
Absolutely. Gus Bradley, sticking with that defensive line conversation, talked about sixth-round pick Michael Bennett and saying he's been working on those pass rush moves.
He's always been pretty good against the run, but those flashes in the one-on-one pass rush is good. As you know, that three-technique position, he's going to have a lot of one-on-one opportunities. So to start seeing that out of him would be great.
All right. Well, you know, the fact that they're seeing a little bit of flash out of this guy that you get in the sixth round, maybe another steal in the sixth round for him. We certainly, on paper, it looked to be one. And, you know, Michael Bennett has not shown them anything, I think, at this point in time, that makes them feel like they made a mistake by bringing him in. I think Michael Bennett, Tony, as a late round pick, has made more of a splash here in camp than Rashad Greene has picked in the round earlier. And I know different positions, obviously,
sure.
But I think, you know, Rashad Greene is adjusting to life in the National Football League. And we get spoiled, I think, by some of the big-name guys over the last 5 to 6 years, particularly last year. Wide receivers came in and put up dominant numbers, early picks, though, right? And we've seen in recent years Julio Jones, A.J. Green, several others in the rookie seasons really just hit the ground running.
Yeah.
And highly productive numbers. But you go back historically, it is one of the more difficult, more slowly developing positions to transition from college to the National Football League. Moving along with Gus Bradley, one of the guys who doesn't seem to be having any problem transitioning to what's expected to be a big role in 2015. Aaron Colvin got beat by a play I didn't see, but was described to me as basically Allen Robinson just went up over him, used his near 40-inch vertical and his size, and made a spectacular pluck in the end zone for a touchdown over Colvin yesterday. Gus was asked about what kind of talk do you have with a guy like Colvin when Allen Robinson or somebody like that goes up and makes a play. Do you even need to have a talk with him?
Sometimes those things happen. I think he had an early one where he played at nickel where it was a good throw, good catch, and they made a play. Those things, as long as they're staying true to our principles, if you're staying on top, it's good. I think I mentioned this, that we have made such an emphasis, stay on top, stay on top, stay on top, stay on top. And I think our guys have built the conscience, and now we're giving them a little bit of freedom to, they understand that, now be aggressive and being tighter coverage. And so some of those things like that, he's trying, you know, so this is the time to do it. And I think as long as we don't see a habit where we're losing our core principle of staying on top, it's good.
Yeah, and we'll see how that works out. Obviously, Aaron Colvin, one of the studs of training camp to this point. And, you know, part of me's like, hooray, Allen Robinson made a play. And part of me's like, oh, he beat Colvin. Like, that's just the nature.
Hopefully, they're both going to be two key players, right? And somebody's going to win on any given play.
Just the nature of training camp, and that all changes when the Steelers play him tomorrow night. Gus Bradley, talking after practice yesterday, also asked about defensive backs who are out there. I see them after practice every day going to get some extra work on the side with the jugs machine just catching the ball, and how he evaluates interceptions, a stat that the Jags weren't very good at last year.
You know what? I think that, you know, you keep so many stats and you try to analyze things. I know that compared to OTAs, we have a lot more PBUs, pass breakups by the DBs, than we had in the spring. And it was just stay true to it, man. Keep going. Those are going to turn into interceptions, and they got a couple opportunities today. And but being around the ball, making plays on the ball, it just feels more aggressive, tighter coverage, and it, you know, it's challenging the offense even more.
All right, and finally from Gus Bradley, you will hear my conversation with Stefan Wisniewski in the pregame tomorrow, but Gus was asked about Wisniewski and what he's seen from him that makes him feel like Wisniewski is back to the player that he was before he got hurt.
Just in our conversation, I see, you know, like I said in the scrimmage, you saw him be more physical, and I think that's a good sign. When you're seeing him be more physical, and he's not playing any, you know, with any tentativeness, you know, he's playing hard and fast, and you know, probably a little bit rusty at times, but the things that would cause you to believe that he's a little apprehensive aren't showing up on tape.
At Wiz, I'll tell you this much. He says he feels good. Shoulder's not an issue. So, you know, it's how you play between he and Bowanko.
Sure. He's been playing plenty, so he's obviously feels fine.
They've gotten an equal amount of reps at that spot. I don't think anybody has, at least nothing's been tipped off that there's an advantage. There may be a leader in Gus Bradley's mind going into the preseason games, but I think they're both going to get a fair crack at it. As we discussed at length yesterday, look for those guys to each get a start in the first couple of preseason games and try to give, you know,
probably,
a fair comparison against the ones. All right, when we come back, 641-1010, we'll open the phone lines up to you. Check in on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line as well. Where does Everbank Field rank? Not just the game day experience, which by some measures ranked as the best in the National Football League last year, but the facility itself. When it comes to NFL stadiums, the Sporting News had some kind things to say about the place the Jaguars call home. We'll discuss those coming up. Also, tweet us today your feedback on the question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. Which NFL storyline are you following most closely other than Jaguar storylines, which we assume you are following very, very closely, but which one around the league intrigues you the most this preseason? Tweet at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony if you want to weigh in on that. Jaguars Today continues on 1010XL 92.5 FM. We're easily distracted. Beware, we've got the live stream of Tiger at the PGA Championship up. I gotta say, Tony, these Microsoft Surface tablets certainly stream better than these old TRS-80s they had us
much,
on.
Much, much better.
Yes. We get live streaming video where we just saw Tiger gag about a five-footer for par.
Scobie
one over. Scobie update. There you go. Josh is hanging on our every word. I hope Josh is out there practicing to hold off young Jason Myers right now for his sake, anyway. I'm not rooting against Jason Myers. Anything to the fact that maybe his parents are big horror movie fans? Jason Myers? You got Michael Myers, you got Jason, you got Friday the 13th and Halloween.
I don't know.
Covered.
I hadn't even thought about it.
If his name is Jason Freddy Myers, that
then
is the scariest
up, like
individual.
Jason Frederick Myers.
Yes, his parents would be the most twisted individuals out there. So we'll have to maybe, I don't know, look at a roster. Something
right.
It would require like looking at a roster, Tony. No middle names on the roster in front of me, so I'll just skip it.
Yeah, I can't
be bothered.
We'd have to look up information on the backup kicker that we hadn't even discussed.
Can't be bothered to type that in there. Absolutely cannot. If you want tickets, my seats in the 213, baby, which I've yet to sit in. I've sat in them, but not for a game. I mean, I've just sat in them when I selected them. Section 213,
mm-hmm.
Row V, baby. It's the best. It's the best. The best of all worlds. They're close to the aisle, but not right on the aisle, because I don't like to climb over people. I got seats 3 and 4. I'm not going in
too far if I don't have to. But I've got my tickets. They're not going to get used unless you use them. So email me at miked@1010xl.com. Tell me why you should get my tickets and include your phone number. And around noon, I'll take a look, see what we got, and we'll give you a call if you are the winner. If you don't get a call, assume you didn't win them. All right? So just want to make sure they go to good use at one of the best stadiums in the National Football League. So says the Sporting News, Tony. It's nice to see that whatever way Jacksonville gets some praise nationally. I went on a show, as we all do. Everyone on the station, we all get calls, because just like we have Juan Kincaid coming on, we get calls from other stations.
Sure.
Hey, would you come on and talk Jags with us? We're doing a training camp preview, what have you.
Yeah. Great. I've done a couple in the last week.
Absolutely. Yeah. I did one with Washington, might have been yesterday morning. And right away, first thing, I got to ask you about these fans, man. Somebody wrote this article and said, da-da-da-da-da, Jags worst fans, da-da-da. And I'm just like,
you got to ask about it?
Honestly, do you have to ask about it? And so I went in, and what I should have done is said, really? Why don't you tell me about Dan Snyder taking all those seats out at FedEx Field, right? Look at your metro area compared to what's going on here in Jacksonville. And it gets tiresome.
You don't want to sound like that guy either.
Right, but I even said, I said, you know what, the risk of sounding defensive, and then I went off on this, I don't know who wrote this scrub article. I said, it's clearly somebody who has either never been to Jacksonville or figures he could take pot shots because it's a relatively small fan base compared to the rest of the league, or both, or whatever, and it's, you know, just an uninformed idiot, and I'm glad I don't know his name because I'm not going to give him any credence to talk about it, but that's still the impression you get. I go on these things, hey, before that, are you guys really moving to London? You know, are you? Yeah, oh, I guess you gave up on the L.A. thing.
Right.
So now you got to move on to something new. And so I had about had it with that. So it was nice to see the Sporting News in the rankings of the fields. They're not talking about the game they experienced so much, because which ranked number one. It's not just that. It's the facility itself. And no surprise at Lambeau Field, to me at least, no surprise at Lambeau Field ranked as the best stadium in the National Football League. And part of that is atmosphere. But it is kind of a collegiate feel that you get at Lambeau Field. It's hard, no matter how many times it's described to you, going there one time, for granted, just a preseason game. I couldn't imagine what it's like in the regular season or the playoffs.
Right.
But you really feel the ghost and the history there. At least I did, and I'm not one of these guys that cares all that much about that when it comes to football stadiums. But no great surprise. I didn't think that Lambeau was there. AT&T Stadium, Dallas, where they played.
No shock.
Been there. I mean, look, it's fine. The stadium's very nice. There's nothing wrong with it. It's got that huge scoreboard. Well, it used to be a huge scoreboard.
That's a tiny scoreboard.
Really, I mean, but it's placement that dominates your view.
Yeah.
Right? Imagine if you took one of these end zone scoreboards and just hung it right over the middle of the field. That's why it's so hard to escape that thing, because it's right there in your face the whole time. It's not in your peripheral vision, but it's a nice stadium. I'm not going to run it down.
And it's got a bunch of cool stuff in there, right? I mean, it's got like the different bars and
restaurants,
those kind of sections.
And all kinds of stuff like that.
It's a neat stadium.
Jerry was one of the first guys to say, hey, let's purposely put in standing room only. You know, and let's do it this way, make it a kind of a party deck atmosphere. Others have since followed. Let's see what else we got here. Those were the top two. Levi's Stadium in San Francisco. Have not been to that one, but that's where they're playing Super Bowl 50, so I plan on getting to that one.
Apparently they don't take into account how terrible the field is.
Maybe they don't. It's just the stadium structure itself, I guess, and everything that goes along with it. Yeah, because the field gets a really, from what everyone says, well-deserved bad rap.
Yeah.
It says the NFL's newest facility took a big hit for its parking issues last year during its first season of operation, but this building in the heart of Silicon Valley represents the future in mobile technology, where every fan in the seating bowl can order food and drink from their mobile device. The Pepsi and Bud Light-themed areas in the upper decks of both end zones are good points to watch plays develop. The Pepsi space is a 12-pack of seats designed like soda cans. So,
okay.
Are they on the field? We got some of those. I'm sure.
I can't imagine, by the way, speaking of parking, I can't imagine there's a stadium that's easier to get in or out of than ours.
I have not found one. Granted, for you and I, we leave well after the game's over. So
sure, but I haven't always, right? You know, and it's, I, any event down here outside of Florida, Georgia, where people are camped out for a week, right? That's a different kind of atmosphere for what they're doing down here. It's so easy to get down here or get away from it after a game compared to any other city I've been in doing NFL football.
Yeah, I would agree with you, but I say that with the caveat that I don't know if it's always that easy.
Sure.
20 minutes after the game concludes.
And I haven't been everywhere.
And I'm sure everywhere else is tough 20 minutes after the game concludes.
Sure.
As well.
I know Miami stinks. Miami, you stink. I don't know where they are on this list.
Oh,
but I hate going to your stadium. I hate trying to get out of your stadium. Your stadium is terrible.
It is all those things, although they do have a nice ice cream sundae machine.
They do that.
Do it yourself in the press box.
They got that going.
Centrally Linked Field up in Seattle. Freaking gorgeous, Tony. I mean, absolutely gorgeous. The play on the field by the Jaguars was anything but. When I went, that was the Mike Sims Walker suspended game. Was that 41 or 47 and nothing?
Something along those lines, yeah.
They had over 40. The Jaguars had less than one, okay? It was not a good day.
They're number four?
But that's number four.
Okay.
CenturyLink Field, and I'm telling you, it is spectacular. Put the history of Lambeau aside, I think CenturyLink Field is the spot in the National Football League. Let's see, moving on to number five. We don't have far to go here. Number five is Arrowhead. You and I have both been there. I don't know if there's anything so spectacular about the stadium itself. It's a rabid fan base. It's okay.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember anything special. You know, we went out there for that Week 17 game all those years ago. I don't remember anything special about Arrowhead.
It says just completed a $375 million facelift 5 years ago, which was after we had been there. So,
yeah.
You know, that, and it said it preserved the seating bowl as is, which features some of the league's best sight lines. And it says also the iconic Arrowhead shaped video boards in both end zones, you know, bring a little ambiance to that. All that's well and good. Number six on your list, Everbank Field.
There we go.
Jacksonville, Florida. That's pretty damn cool.
It is.
I think. Sixth best facility in the National Football League. And so says the Sporting News. Give team owner Shad Khan credit. The Jags continue to struggle on the field, but they're building lots of buzz for improving the fan experience at Everbank over the past 2 years. The building has added the biggest video boards in sports, swimming pools and cabanas, and bikini-clad girls fronting what was known as the Clevelander Deck, now FanDuelville. And another sports spinoff of the famous South Beach establishment, that was the Clevelander Deck, long live FanDuelville at this point in time. But the amenities continue. The cabanas, all the premium seating options, the on-field seating, the ones I think that are so cool, the little tables, the rail tables,
yep,
with the four seats.
And the upgrades that are coming with the club seats and everything.
All
that's
that
on
stuff.
Yeah, it's on the way, baby.
Yeah, so but it's nice, you know, because I think it's very easy for people to do what those clowns in Washington did the other day and just go, oh, you know, let's go with the same old lazy story. Nobody in Jacksonville cares about football. Nothing's happening down there without actually, I don't know, hitting the Google machine for 3 minutes.
Well, sure, and it's just stupid because there aren't many, if any, places in the NFL where if they had a team that was winning games at the kind of rate the Jacksonville Jaguars were, wouldn't be having problems as far as just attendance issues, right? I mean, no team is immune to that type of thing. Nobody is immune to that. And that other cities or national guys want to take shots at Jacksonville. Look, the truth is at Shot Con, we're here. We know what's being done here in the city to improve the game day experience. They know. They say it every time they talk to us about it. They know the on-field has to catch up to what they're doing as far as the stadium and the billboards and all that stuff. Everything else has to catch up on the field. But when it does, we'll all laugh at you, Nation. That's what we'll do when there's 75,000 people in here screaming every single Sunday for a winning product in the best stadium experience in the NFL. We'll laugh at you and all the stories that you've written for the past 20 years about how lame this city is. Because we know what it is, and we know what it can be when this place is bumping. And the next time it gets to being bumping, they'll be doing it with all this other stuff, too. We'll have FanDuelville, and we'll have those big-ass billboards. We'll have all that stuff going on at the same time. Make fun of us all you want.
New slogan for the Jaguars. We had no limits. We had more. Now, let's get bumping. Okay. There you go. A final, last few stadiums in the top 10, according to the Sporting News in the National Football League, with Everbank coming in at number 6. Heinz Field in Pittsburgh, which they tout the South End Zone Plaza view of the Ohio River. Is that the river everyone wants to jump into when they realize they live in Pittsburgh, I'm wondering? Or is it one of the other rivers that comes together in that area? The Superdome in New Orleans. It's been a while since I've been to the Superdome.
I wasn't in there for the game. They had media day there.
Well, after Katrina, they put $350 million into it.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think. I did actually go there for a Jags. Was it a preseason game? Maybe they played in New Orleans a few years ago. It might have been a preseason game. Back when our buddy Joe Block was working for the Saints Radio Network at the time. Now with the Brewers. He's just a little jump around with anybody kind of guy, this guy, Joe Block. Anyway, the Superdome is in there at number 8, followed by University of Phoenix Stadium. That's a really nice stadium.
It is
out
nice.
There in Arizona.
It's a cool look, too, like driving up to the whole...
It is.
It's a cool look.
And I've not been to Ford Field. So I've been to, I think, all of those except Ford Field.
What's at the bottom?
At the very bottom, I think it was Oakland. At the very bottom. It's one of these slideshow deals, man. I got to click through the whole thing to get to the, you know, the bottom of the thing. So I'm pretty sure it was Oakland. Let me see if I've got that right here. And I hate it because I just did, and I just gave him a bunch of clicks. The Coliseum out in Oakland is at the very bottom. Qualcomm in San Diego, and then the Georgia Dome. So at least the other two are trying to get out.
Right. It could have been St. Louis. Like, it could have been the bottom three all trying to get to L.A.
Yeah, by the way, FedEx Field. Hey, Washington, your stadium sucks, okay? You're ranked right above
the team.
Georgia Dome. Yes, so does your owner, and so does everything about your franchise. All right, there, I said it. Send your complaints to MD_1010XL on Twitter and see if they don't get ignored. All right, coming up next, we've got this date in football history and the drive around the NFL. We'll take a look at some of the matchups tonight in the preseason as well. 641-1010 if you'd like to get in. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. Birthdays on this date, 1965. Happy 50th to longtime Houston Oiler defensive back Chris Dishman, two-time Pro Bowler, and one-time making an appearance on the first-team All-Pro list. 1970, 45 years young, Elvis Gerbach, as the Ravens still contend if they had stuck with Dilfer instead of Gerbach. They would have won another Super Bowl. Who knows? And then the would-be Jaguar, born in 1987, Tony, 28 years old, Devin McCourty. Oh, this hurts to say the name. Devin McCourty, born on this date tonight, specifically tonight. We got six games in the National Football League to keep an eye on in the preseason. New Orleans is in Baltimore. The Jets taking on the Lions. New England with Jimmy Garoppolo hosting Green Bay. Chicago and Miami getting together. Washington's in Cleveland, and Dallas is at San Diego tonight. And that is this date in football history brought to you by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. Whether it's your home, whether it's your business, repairs, re-roofs, call 287-7756, license number CCC056794. Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing, bringing you this date in football history.
Now, the drive around the NFL on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
The Indianapolis Colts and fourth-year wide receiver T.Y. Hilton have agreed to a contract extension for 5 years and $65 million, with $39 million guaranteed, according to ESPN's Adam Schefter. Hilton made his first Pro Bowl last year after his second consecutive 1,000-yard receiving yard season with Indianapolis. The 25-year-old caught 82 passes for 1,345 yards and 7 touchdowns from Andrew Luck. New York Jets quarterback Geno Smith, after seeking a second opinion, has opted to have surgery on his broken jaw. The timetable for his return remains at 6 to 10 weeks. The fallout from the story continues, though, with some unnamed teammates telling the New York Daily News that Geno Smith deserved the punch from his now former teammate. Probably not a good look for a guy going into his third year in the league. If there's guys in your locker room, you get punched in the face by somebody else who gets cut from your team immediately for having done it. It's been termed a sucker punch by some. Maybe not so much with everything that went on between the two. Apparently, Geno Smith, according to some in that locker room, had his finger in the face of his teammate that eventually punched him and was telling him what you're going to do about it, basically, in regards to the $600 that he was not paying back that he allegedly said he would.
The big issue is Geno Smith, prior to, I think, Monday, was having a terrific training camp in which he had not thrown an interception. And for him, that's spectacular. So even in the midst of him probably playing his best football, having his best weapons around him, Tony, the fact that an unnamed teammate would be so willing, if not quick, to throw that out there and basically throw Geno under the bus, even if it's deserved, you typically will rally around the quarterback if he's really the leader of that team, which gives you a lot of indication that he wasn't doing anything, or there was a large portion of the locker room that was not going to be won over by Geno Smith.
No.
And it makes you wonder, honestly, if Fitzpatrick's even credible. Does Geno Smith ever get back on the field for the New York Jets, barring injury?
And you're talking about a new head coach, new regime up there in New York, who wanted to take one last look at a second-round pick from a couple years ago, right? I mean, you felt like that is what was happening anyway with Geno Smith, and when you have teammates talking about him the way that they are right now, you get the sense it's not going to happen in New York. Can he go somewhere else and get another chance? Yeah, I mean, guys hang around in this league all the time, but man, it for a guy who I can remember the story on draft night of him, the big babyish look on his face when he wasn't drafted in the first round.
He was going to leave.
That idea that he's just going to pack it up and go home, and he had to be convinced to stick around. You kind of had the sense then that I don't know how this guy's going to handle, you know, what he's going to be thrown into in the National Football League. And to this point, it hasn't been well, the way that he's handled anything.
No, and despite that, Manish Mehta, who covers the Jets for the New York Daily News, reported that when Rex Ryan got the job in Buffalo, that he mused aloud to friends whether or not he wondered if the Jets would be willing to trade Geno Smith to the Bills. So Rex obviously liked him or thought there was something there in him, and he was ready to seemingly bring him in and cast out the guy, the only quarterback drafted ahead of him, which was E.J. Manuel, which, by the way, I don't know if you saw this tweet yesterday. I forget who sent it, but E.J. Manuel was running third team, right? How the mighty have fallen in 2 years, right? Third team with the Buffalo Bills. His first pass went into the Bills' hospitality tent.
What?
Yes, at practice yesterday. That was the tweet. E.J. Manuel takes the field, leading the third team out. First pass lands in Bill's hospitality tent.
How?
I'd say he overthrew his intended target, is my guess.
Holy cow.
Yes, that's a little bit off the mark. Jets versus Detroit. See, I cannot watch the rest of the National Football League without an eye towards, you know what I'm talking about.
Fantasy.
Right. I want to know what all the skill guys are doing. You know, I'm sure there are some fine linebacker battles taking place in other cities around
all
the country.
All over, yeah.
But I'm more concerned with Ameer Abdullah. And does he look like Quicksilver? Like they described, they said, trying to hit him is like grasping at air. You can't get a solid shot on this guy up there in Detroit. To me, Tony, the biggest thing I want to see, the biggest storyline I want to see, particularly this week in the preseason, it's all about the quarterbacks, but particularly Garoppolo, right? I just want to see what he looks like. And I grant it's the first preseason game. You're not going to get, you know, all the top guys running very deep in this. Who knows? Maybe you don't even get any Gronk, but you know you're not going to get Tom Brady. I just want to see if Jimmy Garoppolo runs him out there with confidence. What does he look like? Does he look like he's in command? Because it's still up in the air as to which way this thing will go with the court. I think most people feel now that Brady will be on the field in Week 3, but that has fluctuated greatly, right? Over the course of this whole Deflategate story. So
well,
that's number one for me.
Yeah, it depends on when you get on Twitter, right? I mean, basically, it's that kind of thing. The temperature on whether or not the suspension is going to be reduced goes up and down based on whatever questions the judge was asking at a certain point during that hearing yesterday. But yeah, obviously curious to see Jimmy Garoppolo. I think, look, Manziel is going to be on the field tonight, you know, up there in Cleveland. And that story with the Cleveland quarterback job is a fascinating one. Last year, I thought Mike Pettine handled it about as weakly as you possibly could throughout the preseason, not naming a starter, keeping it open that entire time instead of just letting his team get ready for the season. It turned into a bit of a distraction, it felt like, early on for them.
Don't you feel, though, in hindsight, that maybe that probably the organization wanted it to be Manziel, and Pettine was like, I'm not going to make that call
right
now because this guy is not showing me anything that indicates he deserves it. I think Mike Pettine might have been stuck, even though he did handle some things poorly. and amateurishly last year. I think he was stuck in a little bit of a bad spot in retrospect, you know, knowing he had a front row seat to what was going on with Manziel.
Yeah, and look, it's Josh McCown, right? I mean, that's the other guy that's going to be the potential quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. We've seen him. We know what that guy is, and you would think at some point this year, Johnny Manziel is going to be handed the ball. It's going to happen at some point, it feels like. What does he look like going into his second year where the last month you haven't heard a lot about Johnny Manziel? Where last year was every day it felt like there was some kind of Manziel storyline going on or off the field up there in Cleveland. This year doesn't feel like there's as much of that. Is he learning, right? Not only how to be an NFL player away from the field, but on it as well, because he was a mess in the preseason last year.
Well, and, you know, they're taking on Washington, Tony. You're talking about two of the most recent Heisman winners, right, which are no one's expecting anything out of at this point in time. And at least RG3 at one point in his career showed something. Of course, he showed it when Mike Shanahan was willing to run a system that was, you know, going to put him at physical risk with a very heavy read option system. And the word that I've heard, and I haven't seen it with my own eyes, is that Griffin is not the explosive athlete that he was prior to that ACL injury. We'll see. We saw such a brief glimpse of him last year, and I can tell you this. I was told the Jags were not happy when he went out of that game injured last year, that they thought they had a much better chance to beat him than they did anybody else coming in to throw from the pocket.
Well, and it goes back to a conversation we were having during all those guys' rookie years. Kaepernick was in his second year, right? But all those other guys' rookie years, it was which of these guys looks like they're going to be the best from the pocket, too.
Sure.
And eventually, that's what you have to do to be an effective quarterback in the NFL. And I think a lot of us thought it would be RG3 at the time, that he would prove to be the most effective guy in that kind of position. I think looking back on it now, it looks like it may be Russell Wilson when everything is said and done as the guy who could be the most effective doing it from inside and outside the pocket, at least among those young, scrambling guys. Russell's also the guy who doesn't take the big shots. And RG3, look, we all know he's taken those in his career. Can he transition to be a pocket quarterback? I don't know. And all indications are his coach doesn't like him. Like, it's a weird situation for him up there in Washington, and watching RG3 and Johnny Manziel being on the same field tonight should be interesting.
Right now, tied at the top of the leaderboard at the PGA Championship, Hideki Matsuyama and Dustin Johnson. Dustin Johnson's good for a Thursday and Friday appearance on the leaderboard at every major championship.
He'll be on the leaderboard on Sunday.
He may be going in the wrong direction if recent history is any indication. So that's where he stands. Tiger was one over last I saw. Did he miss that putt when he yanked it by on 16 a minute ago coming back?
He made the comebacker.
He did
so
make
he's
the comebacker.
Still won.
That's a pretty good grinding out par for him there then. So he's one over par right now. But most of the guys out on the course so far taking advantage and getting it in red numbers early at the PGA Championship. We're going to head out to the Big Easy. New Orleans is in action tonight, but they'll be in action against your Jacksonville Jaguars later on this season. Juan Kincaid from WWL Television in New Orleans will join us coming up next, as we'll preview what the Saints will bring to the table when they face the Jags ultimately late in the 2015 schedule. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars Today live at Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Everybody is a future superstar. Oh, and it's draft night, Tony. This guy's going to be a good one.
Yeah.
He's a baby-based assassin is what he is. Andres Pete was the selection by the New Orleans Saints with the first of their two first-round picks. Stephon Anthony coming with the 31st selection via the Jimmy Graham trade that netted them the Seahawks first rounder along with Max Unger. And here to talk Saints football with us, Juan Kincaid, WVUE sports director in New Orleans. What's up, Juan? How are you?
Nice to hear from you again. How's things?
Things are great, man. Tell us, before we get to anything else, since we let off with some of that rookie draft coverage, how has this New Orleans Saints rookie class looked so far during training camp?
Well, without a doubt, Stephon Anthony's looked the best. I mean, after a week of training camp, he was already running with the ones, taking over for David Hawthorne at the middle linebacker position. He's been fantastic. Andrews Pete, he's going to be a project. He's going to be a guy that's going to get in on special teams, on third down as the extra tight end, eligible tight end. But he's been also working at left tackle and also right tackle and some guard. Sean Payton been trying to kind of get him used to playing more than one side of the line. And but he's going to be a guy that's going to come along slowly. They're not pressured because they have Zach Street there and Teron Armstead. So they're not pressured to have him start right away. He won't be starting probably until next season or at the end of this season if he comes along the way they expect him to. So the draft classes look pretty well. You've got a couple cornerbacks and Damian Swan and P.J. Williams. And those are two guys that are looking for playing time in kind of the nickel and dime package. It's not going to be starters. So everything's coming along well. This is a team with a lot of unanswered questions right now.
Juan, you know, this is a Saints team that was considered a Super Bowl favorite in the NFC last season. Obviously, this offseason, they made the decision to, you know, some deemed it a fire sale there in New Orleans. When you look at this team compared to where they were at the end of last year, do you think this can be a competitive team in 2015?
Well, I think it's going to be competitive, especially in the division, because I think the division NFC South is weak this year. Obviously, we know it wasn't very good last year, and I'm not sure it's gotten better this year. As far as where they are right now, I think it's the team that's had a lot of turnover. They have a lot of young faces, a lot of unfamiliar names, but the one common that you have here is Drew Brees, and I think if you have him, it kind of lifts up the spirits a little bit and makes you think, okay, we're going to be okay. They've got some offensive weapons on this team. They brought in C.J. Spiller, a guy that they haven't had to kind of play like him since Darren Sproles and Bush before him. Wide receiver, you've got Marcus Colson and Brandon Cook. I think there's enough offense on this football team to still score at close to 30 points a game. The question mark is, how good can this defense be? And I for one, think it's going to be a pretty good defense if they can get Jarius Burr back on the field. So last year, a lot of the players talked at the end of the season about how they read their own clippings early on. And out of training camp, we talked about fantastic.
Still there. Juan, we'll get to the defense more in a second. Looking at that offense a little bit deeper, when you talk about it, you think it's a team that could score 30 points a game. How do they want to do that? In recent years, Drew Brees has been a guy who's thrown it 600 times, and they throw it all over the place. There seems to be talk they want to have a commitment to the run with Ingram and Kyrie Robinson, C.J. Spiller in somewhat of a hybrid role, as you described. How, if any, will this offense look different than it has in recent years?
Well, I think they're going to be more of a running team this year like they were last year. They really started depending on the run in the playoff game in Philadelphia 2 years ago. They realized they could run it with Kyrie Robinson and also with Mark Ingram. They got back to that more last year because they had to. They just didn't have the offensive firepower, and Drew wasn't. The offensive line just struggled last year with pass protection. I think this year it's going to be more of the same. They're going to run the ball a little bit more, but with bringing in Max Unger as your center now, he's kind of solidified that offensive line and made the protection of Brees a lot better from what we've seen so far. It all could change once we get into the game. But I think they're going to run a little bit more this year. You don't have the familiar names at wide receiver outside of Colson and Cooks, and you don't have Jimmy Graham. And, you know, and I've been telling people, you know, you think about this team's best years, 09, 11, 2013, they spread the ball around, 7-8 guys getting touches a game. While last year they depended a lot on Jimmy Graham, he's now gone, so it goes back to being what I think makes this team a better football team where a lot of guys get touches.
How do you think they are going to replace a guy like Jimmy Graham, though? Obviously, you can't replace his talent. He's one of the handful of the most talented tight ends in the league. You mentioned trying to spread the ball around. To who? I mean, who in this offense can replace, even with a bunch of guys trying to come in there, replace the production of a guy like Jimmy Graham, who was such a great red zone target? He was that third down target for Drew Brees. Where are they looking for those kind of answers?
Well, I think what you're going to have, and like I said, you know, they haven't had the Darren Sproles type play in 2 years, but they have him now in C.J. Spiller. He gives them another dimension, and I believe that by the end of the year, I'm going to think that C.J. Spiller is going to be Drew Brees' number one target. It's going to be his number one weapon as far as mismatching into linebacker. If he can give you what Darren Sproles and Reggie Bush gave you for out of that running back position as a guy out of the backfield that can catch the ball, get in mismatches with linebacker, then you have the number of catches being made up with him that you didn't get, that you got from Jimmy Graham last year. But you know, you've had guys emerge in training camp, like Brandon Coleman, who's 6'6", and has looked fantastic in his second year. He's taken a huge jump. He's going to make this team without a doubt. You got to think that Brandon Cooks, if he can stay healthy, which we believe he will, he'll be a guy that catches close to 100 balls. And you're going to need Marcus Colston to have a bigger year than last year. He needs to be in the 50 to 70 ball catches like he always is. If you can get that, then your offense doesn't miss a beat because you're having an even better running game to go along with it, as long as the offensive line holds up. So I think they're going to be offensively as good, if not better, than they were last year, as long as they get all these pieces to work the way they expect that they will.
Juan Kincaid, WVUE Sports Director in New Orleans. Juan, Coleman's been getting a lot of good hype coming out of there. It sounds like he's passing Nick Toon for that opportunity to be the next guy in the pecking order behind Colston and Cooks. Is that right?
Listen, there are a lot of guys that have passed Nick Toon. I think a lot of us are not expecting Toon to make this football team because he needed to come into here and wow. This is his fourth year in the system. There's no taking the time with this guy. He needs to play well, and he has not had the best of camp. He's not been raising eyebrows. Brandon Coleman has passed him without a doubt, but there are other guys that have passed Nick Toon as well. I mean, Josh Morgan's coming here as a veteran guy. He's passed Nick Toon. He has gained experience having played at other places, so I think Nick Toon is on the outs as far as his football team. But a lot will be told once they get into the preseason games. He has to have a fantastic preseason as far as game time action. But Coleman has passed him without a doubt.
Looking on the defensive side of the ball, Junior Gallette, obviously not a part of this team. How do they deal with the fallout, especially with everything that might or might not have been him on that Twitter account of his girlfriend, and how do you replace the production of a guy who was a double-digit sack guy for the Saints?
Well, I think what's going to help this team this year is you've got two cornerbacks in Keenan Lewis and Brandon Brown that are going to play man up on the outside, and that can give you a lot of flexibility with what you can do with bringing Kenny Vaccaro down in the box as another linebacker. You've got some guys that Daniel Ellaby is there, who played under Rob Ryan. You've got to put him on the outside. I just think they're going to have to find a way to get a good pass rush this year. And Rob Ryan's not been afraid of blitzing in the past, but he's had to be obvious with where the blitz is going to come from. This year, you don't have to be sloppy. It's just, again, because you have Lewis and Brown on the outside. They have to be a little bit more creative this year. But I think they can replace his sacks. I really do. I think this team is talented on the defensive side of the ball. Are they going to be a top-10 defense? Probably not. You know, but we're still waiting on Jarris Byrd to come back as well, too. So that's another element that they have to add to the defense when he comes back, if he comes back. So I think the jury is still out on what this defense can do as far as getting a pass rush, but they have to be creative on the defensive side of the ball to get pressure on the quarterback this year.
Other than Stephon Anthony, who would be the top candidate for a breakout on the defensive side of the ball, if there is one?
Wow. That's a good question. I think maybe Ellaby. This is a guy that missed probably the first half week of practice because he was just getting his fitness up. And as soon as he was put in there, he was put in with the ones. You know, David Hawthorne was running middle linebacker alongside Stephon Anthony in a 3-4, but then Hawthorne went to the second team because they believed that much in Ellaby. And a guy who's played under Rob Ryan, has excelled and thrived under Rob Ryan's system before. So I think he's the guy that you want to keep an eye on. I think he's going to play well in this defense because they put a lot of trust and a lot of belief in him. So I think Daniel Ellaby will be a guy that's going to thrive in his defense. Outside of that, I'm really curious to see how the cornerbacks do. You know, I think Kenny Vaccaro at safety can be a guy that could, he needs to come off, trying to bounce back off a tough year last year. I think he's going to have a big year this year as well.
Juan, you mentioned a down NFC South. It certainly was last year, and that allowed a team below 500 to get into the playoffs as the winner of that division. What are your expectations for the Saints overall in 2015?
I think they win the division. I just don't see enough in the other teams to warrant giving them the benefit above the Saints right now. I don't think Atlanta's done very much. I think Tampa Bay is still trying to find themselves with Jameis Winston. I think Carolina, they still don't have any receivers outside of Benjamin. I just think the Saints, as a whole package, and I don't want to be seen biased, although that seems like I am. I just think as a whole package, they're still the best football team in the NFC South. I think they go about 10-6 and get to the playoffs once again. Now, how far they go from there, it all depends on where they're playing, who they're playing, you know, and all those things. I think they're still a playoff football team because Drew Brees is still there. People want to put down on him, but he's still throwing for almost 5,000 yards in the last four seasons. And he still has a high touchdown to interception ratio. I just think he is still an elite quarterback in this league. And if you have that, you have a chance.
Well, Juan, you know, you're allowed to be a little biased because, you know, we feel like we get calls from all over the country. Come on, talk Jaguar training camp. And we're always the ones trying to convince people that, yes, they can win more than four games in 2015. And we end up sounding like the biased ones. But that's all right. So we respect that from you. Sports director at WVUE Television in New Orleans. All we want, Juan, is to be mathematically alive for the playoffs when the Jags come calling on December 27th. Because I guarantee you, the Bold City Brigade and the Teal Street Hooligans, whatever tickets are available, they will send a caravan your way to close out the calendar year, if that's the case. Always appreciate the time, man. Good luck to the Saints for most of the games this year.
Thank you, brother, and good luck to you guys. I'm just glad you're talking about other teams leaving their cities and not Jacksonville this year. That's good.
Right on, man. See, there's a guy who gets it. Juan Kincaid. Thank you, Juan. WVUE Thanks. Sports director in New Orleans, and he's been our go-to guy in New Orleans right. for as long as I can remember.
By the way, that terrible season, quote-unquote terrible season for Drew Brees last year, 69.2% completion percentage, 4,952 yards, which was tied for the league lead.
Right, with Ben Roethlisberger.
With Ben Roethlisberger, 33 touchdowns, which is low for Drew Brees, granted, but 33 touchdowns and 17 interceptions.
Right, the picks were a little high, right, but he was still 2-1 to right. the interception ratio.
He really stunk last year.
He was
year.
Terrible. Oh, my goodness.
The team finished 7-9. Honestly, they were one win away from winning the division.
Right, with a miserable defense.
Right.
Right, and that's what it boiled down to. And, you know, look, Jimmy Graham didn't have quite the year that we've become accustomed to, which makes it even all the more remarkable, Tony,
it does.
That Drew Brees is able to do that.
The season feels worse for New Orleans than it probably was because of the expectations for that team going in. And that's understandable. They were expected to be one of the handful of the best teams in the NFC
sure.
last year, and they weren't.
Some
they weren't close to that.
Had them in the Super Bowl.
I did.
Yeah, I know.
I did. And it made that season feel worse than it actually was, right? And in hindsight, Drew Brees was actually good.
Drew Brees' numbers were fine. There was no issue with Drew Brees in that regard last year. Again, the 17 picks, a little bit high, everything else. Tell me, I mean, are you kidding me? Will Blake Gabbert ever have a year as good as that in his career? You whole aren't Blake Gabbert. Blake Bortles.
No. The answer to Blaine is no.
The first one is no. The second one is I sure hope so. Right?
Emphatic no.
Emphatic no, yes. There you go. A nickel in the jar. For me on that one. All right, so that wraps it up. That's December 27th, Week 16. We've hit them all at this point in time, which is good because now we're ready to get to the games that are actually on the field, even if they are preseason. And obviously tomorrow we'll be looking at nothing but Jags taking on the Pittsburgh Steelers tomorrow night. Today we're asking you in the fan feedback spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, which NFL storyline, other than the Jags, are you most interested in following this preseason? We'll take a look at some of your responses to that coming up. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Also, take a look at the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, which has been busy today as well. Live at Everbank, it's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, getting ready to wrap things up on this Thursday here. Jaguars Today, live at Everbank. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony. XL Primetime, top of the hour, coming your way. You got about 20 minutes if you want to try to get my tickets for tomorrow night's game. If you want my tickets. Maybe you don't want my tickets. But if you want a pair, I've got a pair in the 213 section for tomorrow night. Email MikeD at 1010XL.com. Do not tweet me. Do not text me. Do not do any other thing. But email me at MikeD at 1010XL.com. Tell me why you should get the tickets. And make sure you include your phone number or else we don't have any way to get in touch with you. I guess that's not true. We could email you back, but we're not gonna use that method. We want to call you and get this over with and done with. And I will bring these by the station from the stadium, so you can pick them up anytime after 1 o'clock today if you win them. Won't that be joyous for everybody, Tony? I think so. All right.
At least whoever gets the tickets.
Yes. What NFL storyline are you most interested in following this
Ooh,
preseason?
The couple that have been at the top of the list for me the entire time. I'm still curious to see what it looks like in Seattle with all that they've dealt with this offseason and a bunch of players that are still not happy about their contracts and everything that's going on with them. But probably the most interesting story to me is Philadelphia because of everything that Chip Kelly has done and the types of guys that he has run out of town. I mean, these are big-time players now that he has let go in Philadelphia. And what does it look like for them up there? Sam Bradford being a guy who's been so often injured throughout his career, but feels like he would be a perfect fit for what Chip Kelly wants to do.
Said he hasn't missed a rep so far this year. He's been healthy as can be.
Probably that. I mean, for me, it's Philadelphia.
Yeah, I think that's a great one. Because yesterday, I was asked this question. I said Garoppolo, Bradford were the two guys I'm looking forward to seeing the most this weekend. But you can certainly throw Winston and Mariota in there, as many have suggested today. I want to see, for the same reason you're talking about what's going on in Seattle, what's going to happen in San Francisco? What is that team going to look like this year after the offseason that they had? Arguably the worst in NFL history in terms of losing key guys unexpectedly.
Yeah.
Right? Anthony Davis, by the way, came out early this week and said, no, I still plan on coming back, like maybe next year, maybe a year from now, maybe longer. So, he's taking a break.
So why would you use the retire word?
Because he's taking a break. I don't know what else you'd do. What else are you going to say? I'm not showing up.
I'm not playing this year.
I guess if you retire, maybe they can't find you.
There's too much chaos. I don't want to be a part of this this year.
Some signing bonus. Anyway, we asked you today, what is your NFL storyline that you are following most closely other than the Jags? And we asked you to tweet us and post on the Jaguars Today Facebook page, and many of you did.
Here's what we got from Love Hyphen. Can they just decide if Brady is going to play or not? Tired of waiting for an answer from Cristiano, IKN and Poly transition to UFC.
That just rolls off your tongue right now, IKN and Poly.
Yeah, I know.
Very well done.
From Joe, why Tom Brady's face is melting? Is it global warming? Referring to the,
yes,
the picture
sketch
from yesterday. From Paolo, Manziel and how he plays in the preseason. Curious about that myself. From Daniel, is Peyton Manning done or are all the assumptions false? From Richard, the only NFL stories even remotely on my radar are the Jags, so I will say watching my fellow UCFers. From Isaiah, the Cardinals and Chris Johnson storyline. From Demetrius, I'm curious to see how that Steelers defense fares without Dick LeBeau's vaunted 3-4 zone blitz scheme. It hasn't been great the last couple of years, but certainly not seeing Dick LeBeau is weird up there in Pittsburgh. From Hardy Bro, I want to see Marcus Mariota play against a real defense. And from Chris, the Eagles, curious if they played their chips right. See what I did there?
Yes, we all do see what you did there, and well played, I suppose. I don't know if they're saying Marcus Mariota is facing Pac-12 defenses, if FSU's defense didn't show up. I don't know what the reference is, or if it's just collegiate defenses in general, because certainly you could say the same thing about Blake Bortles.
No, you could.
Or anybody coming into the league.
But I think Oregon's offense overpowers college defense. What they do on offense and the athletes.
Does that mean,
though,
that they're not playing a real defense? I mean,
I think they're playing an overmatched team every week, and that's not going to be the case. In the NFL, you're pretty much evenly matched on a week-to-week basis. That's not going to be the case when you, especially with that quirky offense they run up there. It gives you such an advantage. I mean, you saw it against Florida State last year. That's a good defense that looked lost. Right, playing against Oregon and what Marcus Mariota and those guys wanted to do, that's not going to happen. In the NFL, that's not going to happen. It's going to be an even matchup, and can he overcome that? We'll see.
Some of the other ones here we got on Facebook. Dustin Smith said, how many more touchdowns Winston and Mariota throw than Bortles? Obviously not a Bortles believer right there.
Okay.
Seth Line Gang said, the simultaneous, inexplicable, precipitous fall out of stardom by J.J. Watt, Andrew Luck, and Marcus Mario Brother. So I guess he's like, I got to pick somebody.
He's waiting
Tennessee
on all the franchises in the division to collapse.
Tennessee has no other stars to fall, so let's go with their highly touted rookie quarterback. By the way, Bishop Sankey, who scared absolutely no one last year when it came to breaking a pane of glass with his running style, is getting all the first-team run right now, which doesn't say a whole lot for rookie David Cobb, I would suppose, out of Minnesota.
Not yet, at least.
But, I mean, you know, we've seen guys start slow in their NFL career and come on. You don't see it that often with running backs. I'll continue to say that.
No, you don't. But, again, the preseason is starting, so Bishop Sankey will look like Bishop Sankey.
Could very
and
well.
And does David Cobb look like a playmaker? We'll find out.
We'll find out. Right. This is what this is going to matter a lot more these next glimpses we get over the next 3 weeks in particular than most of what has transpired up until this point. Damon said the Eric Berry story and Tom freaking Brady, hashtag 10 and 6,
Eric
hashtag
Berry's
11
a
and
great
5.
Story.
It is a great story that he's back that quickly and you know, could make a big impact on that football team, obviously. Dustin Cowgill said if Tannehill can take the Dolphins all the way. And then finally, Douglas Pelsey, Mariota's development. He wants Mariota versus Bortles to be the next Brady-Manning rivalry, so we get the national attention of two primetime matchups every year. Hashtag Jaguars today. Hashtag it could totally happen. Hashtag dream big. I would prefer it to be just Blake become the next Peyton Manning or Tom Brady, and that other guy be one of these overmatched division rivals, because it seems like
sure.
Peyton and Brady got on national TV plenty, regardless of the opponent over the years.
Yeah. I'll take Bortles being one of those guys.
Right.
I don't care who, but I don't care if there's another one or the other one in the league.
At this point, I'll take Bortles being Ryan Tannehill, quite frankly, and the trajectory that his career has been on. You know, 27 touchdowns, 12 interceptions last year in his third year in the league. If Blake could approach those numbers this year, in his second year, starting from where things did here in Jacksonville, I think that would be very encouraging for Blake Bortles. But, you know, tomorrow we'll really get into what we want to see on the field. But who doesn't want, I mean, the number one thing has got to be, let's see Blake come out there and, you know, go 9 out of 10 and rip it up and be super efficient, maybe hit one big play down the field, get Julius Thomas and Allen Robinson involved, then get the heck out of Dodge and move on to next week, right? Or maybe it's 5 out of 6, Tony, for 80 yards. Let's see something quick, but let's see it efficient, let's see it look good, and let's not see him under duress from the moment the ball is snapped.
Yeah, I think the offense is obviously the thing tomorrow night. And again, we're going to talk a lot about that tomorrow here on the show, but I think the offense is clearly where the focus is going to be. Because of my belief in Blake Bortles as a player, I don't know that for me tomorrow night going into it, Blake is the thing that I'm most locked in on seeing. For me, it may be the offensive line, and especially the left side of that offensive line, and what it looks like. But that speaks directly probably to the success of Blake Bortles in that game, too. It's that whole offense as a unit, and I think you can pick whichever piece of it you want to say you're the most interested in seeing tomorrow night, and it's fine. That's all fair game.
Yeah, oh, you could. Anybody can like anything they want or focus on anything they want. But to me, even if the O-line looks bad and Blake finds a way to escape pressure and make plays, I'm going to be encouraged by that, because ultimately you find a lineman somewhere. You can't just find that franchise quarterback. You have to have the opportunity to pick him, pick the right one, nurture him for a while. So, you know.
No, I want to see it too. I'm confident in Blake.
I hear you.
Like, I believe Blake's going
to be good. I
want to
see it. I hope he is. And I don't even know if I go as far to say I expect him to be. So I want to see continued evidence of that. But after that, it's, come on, Luke Jokel, right? I mean, it's got to be. It's more than just the offensive line, Tony. We do want to see Parnell in game action. We do want to see these battles for left guard and center, certainly. And
it's the left side, but it's Jokel.
It's Jokel. I mean, that's the one player who's on the biggest hot seat.
Like,
right now.
It's almost like when I'm watching plays tomorrow night, I'm going to watch the snap of the ball, and when I can tell that it's a pass, I'm just watching Jokel.
Right. See how,
right, see what he does, and then see what the result of the play is.
And then go back and watch a replay and watch him and really focus in on him.
Yeah, which is why, for me, maybe offensive line is ahead of Bortles tomorrow.
I understand.
Because I'm not sure that I'll be watching Bortles on every snap that he's out there. I can tell you I'll be watching Jokel every snap he takes.
He is Fat Tony, offensive line studier.
Watcher.
Extraordinaire. Watcher.
I watch him.
Is what he does. All right. That's going to about wrap it up for us. XL Primetime coming up in a few minutes, Tony. I made it through my depression today of being indoors once again. I need my vitamin D. But, you know, I did get to see Gus, so that raised my spirits just a little bit. We appreciate Juan Kincaid from WVUE Television in New Orleans taking a look at the Jags' final regular season opponent that we hadn't discuss, because obviously the Texans in week 17, but we've already gone that route earlier. So we've covered them all. We're ready for the Pittsburgh Steelers to come in here and get theirs tomorrow night. We're ready for the new guys and some of the incumbents to look improved for these Jacksonville Jaguars. Let's just hope that next Monday, or heck, on the post game tomorrow, we're talking about something with a level of enthusiasm instead of gloom and doom. Because, you know,
we were after last year's first preseason
game.
The defense was great.
Cindric Marks gave the impression right from the opening snap that he was going to have a dominant season, and he backed it up.
Turns out that Tampa Bay line
was not very good.
God awful.
But Cindric Mark, what you saw of Cindric Mark was real last year,
yeah.
Despite the fact that he was beating up a guy who would soon be unemployed.
Yeah, I do believe Winston Guy had a pick six in week one of the preseason last year.
Wow. That is a good call.
On a Telvin Smith blitz.
You're absolutely right. And we were all thinking, playmaker! This guy, look at the size of him. Oh, Winston Guy.
Just think about that. Like, when we're talking about week one of the preseason, just keep in mind the last year, week one of the preseason, we were like, ooh, Winston Guy making plays.
Tony the Wet Blanket Smith, ladies and gentlemen. All right, that does it for us today. For Tyler Devitt, for Joe Fortunato, for Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. Back at it tomorrow. I will check my email in the next couple minutes and see who I'm going to give these tickets to tomorrow night's game. And we'll probably do some more ticket giveaways, I'm sure, throughout the course of the season as well. So hopefully you emailed me at MikeD@1010XL.com if you need the ducats. And on we go. XL Primetime coming up on the other side as we sign off from Everbank. Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Ric Flair.